I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Investment because nobody knows how to...
Back in On the Drive, coming up in about 15 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine and... Every Thursday heading into the NFL draft, we will do a different drive draft today. We will introduce the new one and the first one coming up at 3:30. But it is an honor to be joined by our next guest. He is in a really cool museum that some of you call the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. He is in Cooperstown. He's a friend of the show, Denny Matthews. So last week we did Bo Jackson. This week we are doing George Brett. Denny, it's an honor to have you on. Denny, do you remember the first time that you watched George play?
When he came up for the first time as a big leaguer, and he still had ways to go. And I don't know how long he was up, and he went back to Omaha briefly and then came back, and he was there to stay. And I do remember that when he first got to the big leagues, Al Zeke, the Royals equipment manager, gave him number 25. I don't know how many people remember George wearing number 25, but that didn't last all that long. And then when he got back, well, then I think Al Zeke realized he was going to be around a long time and handed him number 5. And I don't know if it was a coincidence or not, but number 5 was the number worn by Hall of Famer Brooks Robinson, who played for many, many years in Baltimore.
Denny, do you remember the moment where you felt like George had a chance to be an all-time great? Because you allude to the struggles he had early in his career. But around that second or third year, once he made his first All-Star game in 1976, he made it every year up until 1988. Do you remember when you thought that George had a chance to be special?
The first time I remember George as being a bona fide big leaguer and he's going to stay for a while was probably the second half of his first full season. That's when he really started to get it, and you could see that if he improved in many aspects of the game, that he was going to be one of the all-time greats, and that's the way it worked out.
As you know, so many great players have that iconic moment. Patrick Mahomes had it against the Tennessee Titans with his touchdown run. Jordan had so many of them. What's the iconic moment for George Brett that sticks out in your mind?
And everybody remembers the home run against Gossage in the playoffs, but I remember his first hit, and he had just come up, and that was in Chicago, and I think the pitcher was Stan Bonson, who had a very good career with the Yankees but ended up with the White Sox at the tag end of his career, and that was when George got his first big league hit. And why I remember that, I don't know. I can't tell you. I know George remembers it. Everybody remembers their first hit. But, yeah, that's pretty vivid in my memory bank.
Denny, earlier today we had on Dennis Leonard, and we talked ad nauseum about the Royals and Yankees rivalry. You certainly know that rivalry as well as anybody. I feel like that rivalry was fueled a lot by George Brett and his competitiveness. For younger listeners kind of like myself that don't really have a context of how great the Royals and Yankees rivalry was, what made it so heated in your opinion?
Well, great players, very competitive players. Most everybody remembers Carrington, the playoff games in those years, late 70s we're talking. And I don't know how many people remember the regular season games. And those at times were more heated than some of the playoff games. I mean, those two teams just went at it hammer and tong. I mean, there were no holds barred, nothing held back. And it was great theater. I'll tell you what, it was every time the Yankees had come to Kansas City, there was a buzz. And every time the Royals went to New York, and as the New York people, you know, some, well, they've seen it all. Well, there was a buzz at Yankee Stadium before the Royals and the Yankees played, and I'm talking about regular season as well as the playoffs.
Right now we're talking to the Hall of Famer, Denny Matthews, getting George Brett stories as we celebrate what would have been the Royals' home opener. If you look at his numbers, 1980 was probably the best year for George. He hit 390. What was it like to follow a player who was chasing 400?
Oh, it was fun because every day was a little bit different. Every night brought two or three more hits. And he was chasing 400 and came up just, what, 5 hits short. And it was a memorable year. I mean, everything that he that he hit, found a hole, and he just made such solid contact. George was never a fast starter. He was always, I think his birthday somewhere in the middle of May, and it was in the middle of May that he really started to hit. And a lot of times he'd go into the middle part of the month of May hitting, I don't know, 250, 260, 265, somewhere in there, which wasn't Brett. But all of a sudden, boy, you talk about getting on fire. I mean, every time he swung the bat, even if he didn't make great contact, it fell in. And it was just a dream year for him. And I think it kind of wore him down a little bit, 1st of September, and then he was having a press conference before every game, every day at a certain time, rather than have reporters coming at him in single file. So, yeah, they did a good job, they being the Royals PR office, and even George himself had a say in it. And they worked their way through it. But, yeah, it was mentally and physically very tiring for him. But, boy, what a run. And, like I said, coming up 5 hits short.
Denny, in retrospect, that's probably the best individual season that you covered. I mean, he hit 390 that year, won American League MVP. He was hitting around 400 as late in the season as September 19th. For all the great individual seasons you called, George Brett's 1980 is probably the best individual year.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that point at all. That was you're exactly on.
Everybody remembers the game, July 24th, 1983. Tell us your Pine Tar game story.
I was on TV at the time. Denny Treese and I were doing TV. Fred White was in the radio booth. And as I recall, Denny was doing the play-by-play at the time, so I was sitting there trying to figure out what was going on. And it was one of those situations where Tim McClellan, the plate umpire, at the bequest of Billy Martin, the Yankee manager, checking the bat. The league, I think, had put out a memo to keep the players from getting the pine tar past the label on the bat. And not that, I mean, it had no effect on the ball at all, but they wanted to keep it clean. And George had a little pine tar above the label, and Billy Martin said, that's breaking the rules. Well, there was no rule on pine tar at all. Look in the book. Look in the 1983 rule book. There's nothing that says you can't have pine tar up to the barrel because it's not going to make any difference. But that was the deal. And, of course, the Royals appealed and won the appeal.
So, Denny, today the Royals are replaying Game 3 of the 1985 ALCS where George Brett went 4-for-4 with 2 home runs and 3 RBIs. When I think most to the legacy of Brett, I think of clutch, that when the moment was the biggest, the stage was the biggest, George always came through. Is there a particular game that stands out for you when you think back to his career?
Yeah, he did, and he was so tough mentally. He accepted that. Some guys would have shied away from a clutch situation or game situation. George embraced it, and he was very good in those conditions, and that's why he always provided the big hit. Let George do it was kind of the motto and the rallying cry in the dugout, and George, I think 9 times out of 10, did it. And he was very, very good in the clutch. And as I've always said 100,000 times, Game 3 against Toronto was the game where that was his best game ever, and the Royals don't win the 85 World Series without a win in Game 3 against Toronto in the playoffs.
Denny, you've called so many great moments. What was it like to call George's final game? And you want to perfectly set the scene between the relationship of the Hall of Fame player and a city who obviously loved a great player as Brett was.
Yeah, I remember his last hit. It was a ground ball up the middle in Texas. And I also remember him, great picture of him kissing home plate at Kauffman Stadium. Those are two things that stand out in my mind about his last week or so as a big leaguer.
Last question here, Denny, and I'll get you out of here. I appreciate it. I asked you this question last week about Bo Jackson. For a lot of people like myself who didn't get the opportunity to see Brett play live but have only seen highlights, as a player, how would you describe George Brett to them?
I would tell anybody who would listen that he was a Hall of Fame player because he was so good mentally and physically. He worked so hard when he came up from the minor leagues. He worked hard in the minor leagues too, obviously, but when he got to the big leagues, he was a little bit deficient defensively. He worked very hard on his defense. He worked very hard on his hitting, as you mentioned, Charlie Lau, and they went through their paces, and he just became a great Hall of Fame all-around player, mentally tough, physically tough. He played through some injuries. Just a great career.
And that is the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, Denny Matthews. We have agreed that next week we will do Frank White's story. Certainly arguably the best defensive player in the history of the Kansas City Royals. A lot of people would argue whether it's Frank White or Alex Gordon. I've actually never asked him who he thinks the better defensive player is. We'll find out next week who Denny thinks it is. If it's Frank White or Alex Gordon, certainly both could lay claim to the title.
Yeah, Frank's got more gold gloves. I think he ended up with 8 of those things at second base. I think that Alex Gordon's highlight package is probably better. Remember at FanFest when we asked Alex Gordon what he thinks is his best play? Alex Gordon had to think about it. He was like, I don't know, man. It might be the play I made in the World Series. It might be when I dove into the stands. Like, Alex Gordon's highlight package, when it comes to an outfielder, at least for like a 5-6 year period, matches up with anybody's in baseball.
When you think about Alex Gordon, his story is so improbable. So he went from being a great college player at Nebraska, was a top 5 pick. I was at his first game that opening day. Many of you probably remember the bases were loaded for Alex Gordon's first at bat, first game home opener. He struck out in that. He struggled his first couple of years. He goes down. A lot of people at that moment were probably ready to give up on Alex Gordon. He then came back and then instantly became one of the 20 best players in baseball in a Royals Hall of Fame in a critical piece for a team that won a World Series. You want to talk about turning things around? I don't know if there's been a bigger turnaround. I'd even say more so than Mike Moustakas in Royals history than Alex Gordon.
He was also a third baseman, and they were like, you know what? We've got a guy named Mike Moustakas coming up now, so you got to move to the outfield because that's what happens. And all he did was turn out to be probably the best Royals outfielder defensively of all time. Lorenzo Cain was great. There were some great ones back in the day, but none better than Alex Gordon.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we will debut our new Drive Draft. We will do one every Thursday leading into the first round of the NFL Draft. We'll do that coming up at 3:30. But next, we'll go inside the mind of the machine. That's coming up. So Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on the Drive, coming up in 15 minutes, we will debut a new Drive Draft. We will do one every Thursday until the first round of the NFL Draft. We'll debut that coming up in 15 minutes. Before we do that, let's take a trip inside the mind of the machine.
Guys, they're going to replay the Trojan War special between USC and Texas. T-Dot, which quarterback did you think was going to be better in the NFL, Vince Young or Matt Leiner?
Matt Leiner. I thought Matt Leiner had a chance to be a franchise quarterback. I thought the situation that he got drafted into in Arizona was absolutely perfect. Remember, he had Steve Breston and Larry Fitzgerald. I don't know what happened with Matt Leiner. Maybe it was he just got Hollywood and just didn't work anymore, but I felt like Matt Leiner was going to be a franchise QB in the NFL.
Would you consider Reggie Bush a bust once he got to the NFL?
Absolutely. I actually think that he was drafted probably a little bit too early. I'd love to see him in today's game that's certainly a lot more wide open where running backs aren't supposed to have the 250, 300 carries, and he could be that 125, 150 catch out of the backfield kind of guy. I think Reggie Bush would be perfect in this generation.
I think he had multiple seasons where he did have maybe not 100 receptions, but close to it. And I want to say he only had one season where he rushed for over 1,000 yards, and it was late in his career with the Dolphins. He had a really weird career based on what we thought he was going to be. Speaking of the foosball, Tyreek Hill smoked the Honey Badger in the first round of the Madden tournament, and it got ugly. Other than the Chiefs, who's your go-to team when playing Madden?
It kind of depends on the season. I haven't really played this year's Madden a whole lot. Probably the team I maybe have like the most fondness for was the 04 year when everybody was playing with the Falcons. I was playing with the Minnesota Vikings. They still had Dante Culpepper. Randy Moss was an absolute beast. They had this formation. All my Madden players know, shotgun tight. Oh my goodness. You could just absolutely exploit the defense. And that's when you could run HB counter and get like 9 yards a carry if you knew how to run it right. They had Michael Griffin at running back and he had 99 speed. That's probably the team I'm most fond of in my Madden years.
I love Dante Culpepper. Talk about no man on the Minnesota Vikings. Knowing how bad Tyreek Hill did it to Honey Badger yesterday in Madden, I know you proclaim to be the best Madden player in Kansas City when you're at your peak. Do you think you could beat Tyreek Hill?
Like 2014 Carrington?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't think so. It got pretty bad, man. By the way, I'd still beat you in NBA Jam, and you can pick my squad. What do you think about that?
You know the type, loud as a motorbike, but wouldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight?
I've heard it.
That's you.
With WrestleMania 36 on tap this weekend, it made me wonder, C-Dot, what era of wrestling was better? The Hogan, Savage, Ultimate Warrior era, or the Cena, Rock, Stone Cold era of wrestling?
Well, the Cena era and that one's a little bit different. I mean, my favorite era is the Attitude era, the peak of Shawn Michaels, the peak of the Rock, the Hart Foundation. That's kind of more my era. The Hogan era, that was just the late 80s. I mean, I was a baby at that point, so I didn't really get into wrestling. Like, I got into wrestling the Lex Luger, Sting. They were a tag team, WCW, WWF. One was on TNT. One was on USA. You had to flip back and forth between those two on Monday Night Football. That's my era.
What was that tag team called when Lex, what was his name, Luger?
Yeah, Lex Luger and Sting. They just were Lex Luger and Sting.
No. Don't cheat. Don't Google it.
I don't know the answer.
69306. The city will help us out. They had a name. They were called the Somebodies. I just can't remember what they were called.
I used to love the Hart Foundation for some reason. Like, I don't really remember why I loved them so much, but Bret Hart, he was just cool to me. I liked his leather jacket. I liked his glasses, his hair. He always looked like he just hopped out of the shower. I loved Bret Hart.
He was the coolest. Until I saw him at the Hartford Civic Center in 1990, and he gave the kid right behind me his glasses. I literally thought he was handing a young sports machine the glasses. Like, this is going to be the greatest moment of my life.
His glasses were so cool,
dude,
man.
Dude, and then he handed it to the little kid right behind me, little snot-nosed punk. Celebrity birthday time. I'm obviously upset, Rob, so we got to get off that topic. David Letterman, it's his birthday this week. How old's he going to be?
Letterman's going to be 71.
75.
73. We'll split the difference. Also, Al Bundy's birthday this week. I believe his name is Ed O'Neill.
Yeah, he's in Modern Family. He's Kevin O'Shea.
He's all the above. How old is he?
71.
I'm actually going to say 75.
72. Anderson Silva, the Spider.
46.
41.
45. Speaking of 45-year-olds, Ichiro made his major league debut at 28 years old. 19 years ago today.
We don't talk enough about how Ichiro was an absolute Royals killer. Like, if we made a list, an all-time team of guys who used to terrorize the Kansas City Royals, Ichiro might be number one on the list. Torrey Hunter might be second.
What do you mean if we did that? There's no sports going on. We're absolutely going to do that. That's the best idea you've had since the coronavirus. 69306, who've been the biggest Royal killers? Torrey Hunter has to be at the top of that list.
Ichiro used to absolutely terrorize the Royals.
Pedro Martinez.
The Royals.
Pedro also had to have gone like 18-0 against the Royals.
I went to the game. I don't remember what year it was. It was like bottom of the ninth. Ichiro hit a home run. And think of Ichiro, who didn't have a whole lot of pop. He hit it into the fountains. Like, he used to, I don't know what it was about the Royals. Maybe it was the barbecue. He's actually given the biggest donation to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. It was Ichiro.
Go figure.
Yes, the biggest donation was Ichiro Suzuki.
That I would not have guessed. That year that we're talking about, his first year in the bigs, he hit 350, led the league in hits, stolen bases, won the gold glove, and the MVP. Incredibly underrated. Maybe it's because he played in Seattle. Who do you think is the more memorable Seattle athlete? Ichiro, Russell Wilson, or Sean Kemp? 1 through 3.
Ichiro, I think it's actually in order. Ichiro 1, Russell Wilson 2, Sean Kemp 3.
No love for the Rain Man?
I don't think he was more than those first two guys.
Frank Clark said today, and I quote, "I'm trying to be humble, and then it just kind of sets in that I'm a Super Bowl champ." Yeah, you are, Frank. Damn right you are. In hindsight, was Frank Clark worth the money that the Chiefs ended up giving him?
Yeah, absolutely. Performed well in the playoffs. They won the trade. So yeah, I think he's worth the contract. I don't really know what more you could have got out of the contract. Second half of the season, he was fantastic. You won the Super Bowl.
Did you see LaMelo Ball bought his Australian basketball team?
I did see that story.
Do you still have the opinion one day that LeBron James is going to be the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I don't know if he'll be the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I do feel like he'll be the owner of a basketball team.
He's got to be inching toward a billion, right? When you talk about the Nike and all the other endorsements and the NBA money that he's made, it's got to be close to a billion in the bank account.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he wasn't a billionaire or really close to it. Somewhere in that 900 or higher range, I'd be surprised, especially because he invested in Beats very early on, so he got a piece of that.
Good
lifetime contract that he has with Nike. He just has so many connections, and he's so well-liked in the basketball circle that he'll be a majority owner at some point.
Oh, for sure.
According to a Bleacher Report article from July of 2018, his total earnings, career earnings, have eclipsed the $1 billion mark.
I believe it. Which Stallone character is more iconic, C-Dot, Rambo or Rocky?
Rocky. I don't really think it's close between those two. I think that Rocky might be the most popular movie character of all time.
I didn't think about that a little bit.
I mean, it's probably Rocky or a character from Star Wars. I can't really think of anyone else who...
Somebody from one of those mob movies, I feel like.
But I just don't know if they've... Rocky's still really relevant culturally in 2020. The movie came out in the 70s. Like, if this wasn't Corona time and they did a Creed 3, Creed 3 would do really well. It's like, they've been making... What is the ninth Rocky movie? There were five of the originals, Rocky Balboa, and then they did a spinoff series. This would be the ninth Rocky movie, and it's still going strong.
That also helps when it comes to popularity. Like, if they made one of the movie... Every day we talk about Forrest Gump, so here we'll give you our 30 seconds of Forrest Gump. I would say Forrest Gump is a more iconic movie character than Rocky. It's just they only made one Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't agree, though.
But Terminator, Rambo.
I'm a huge Rambo fan. It's one of my favorite movie series. My mom was a big fan as a kid, so I just watched it a lot, so I love Rambo.
Your mama like Rambo?
She's a big Rambo fan.
Before we get out of here, Derrick Henry signed his tender with the Titans, which was just over $10 million. How many running backs would you rather have over Derrick Henry?
Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley is probably the list.
Dalvin Cook?
No, I think Derrick Henry's better than Dalvin Cook.
Alvin Kamara?
No, I thought Kamara really faded the second half of the season, where I'm not really sure about him. And I don't know if he can... He's, to me, a really strong 1A. Like, you need that thunder and lightning combination. You need Latavius Murray. You need Mark Ingram. I don't think you need that with the other guys. So I would put him a notch below. So that's probably the three I have. You love the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know what it is about the Vikings, but that's your squad. Everybody's got their squad. You love the Vikings.
I'm a Kirk Cousins believer. Obviously,
you like
overpaid.
All their parts, though. You love the other guys on the team.
If I could say the name of that white wide receiver, how do I say his last name?
Adam Thielen.
If I could say that guy's name. And then I used to like their secondary until they traded everybody away. And
you see
right.
Xavier Rhodes sign a one-year deal with the Colts.
Everybody's gone. They still got Mike Zimmer. They'll make the playoffs and fade away like they do every year. You're outside the mind of the machine.
Coming up next. Every Thursday leading into the first round of the NFL draft, we will do a different drive drafts. A lot of you are stuck in the house, quarantined, and you're eating a lot of snacks. We introduced the Drive Snack Draft. That's coming up. It's the Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
So, coming up at the end of the month, the NFL draft will take place via Skype, Zoom, however people are communicating these days. Every Thursday leading into the NFL draft, we will do a different drive draft. Many of you are quarantined, stuck at home, working from home, and you've been eating a lot of snacks, more snacks than you normally do. I don't know about you guys, but I'm a snacker. I don't really eat a lot of big meals, but I'll kind of nibble on things throughout the course of the day. So what we're going to do is the Drive Snack Draft. The two concrete rules are no alcohol, at least for the basis of this draft, and one per brand. So, for example, Sean, if you take Doritos Cool Ranch, I can't come back and take Nacho Cheeser. You can't come in and take the hot Doritos. Once you select the kind of Doritos are off the board. I'm sure, Sean, you will find some loophole here. You'll ask 900 follow-up questions over the course of the game, but that is the rules of the Drive Snack Draft. Does everyone understand the rules?
Yeah, I think I get them.
All right. Sean, you have the first overall pick in the Snake Draft. Five selections apiece. Sean Levine, you are up first.
With the number one overall selection and the 2020, what are we calling this thing? Snack Draft? In the 2020 snack draft, I'm taking orange Gatorade. I'm taking orange Gator. I'm going to need something to drink. The rest of everything is going to be food instead of beverage. It's great when it's cold. It's still okay when it's warm. And if you happen to be on a road trip and there's not a rest stop around, you can pee in an empty Gatorade bottle depending on the size. I think orange is the best flavor. With the number one overall pick, I'm taking orange Gatorade off the board.
Very solid selection. I wonder the value is a little high here, going number one overall pick with the Gatorade.
Yeah, that's a reach.
Very quality pick here with the Gatorade. Rob, you have the number two overall pick.
I'm going to take the aforementioned Doritos. I think they're the best chip. I get a nice wide variety of options within said chip. And, you know, you can't snack without chips. I will take Doritos.
Okay. I have the double pick here in the Drive Snake Draft. With my third overall pick, I will take Pringles. I'm a huge fan of Pringles. Barbecue flavor. Original. Cheese. Sour cream is disgusting. With the fourth overall pick, I will take by far and away the best non-alcoholic drink, and I will take Simply Lemonade off the board. Simply Lemonade off the board. Rob, you have the fifth overall selection.
I'm going to stay in the salty category. We're about to have some nice weather in theory, so I'm going to sit on a porch and enjoy some sunflower seeds. I will take sunflower seeds off the board.
Sunflower Good. Seeds, a very quality selection.
If you're playing old man softball, if I'm just chilling at home or on a road trip, there's many better options than sunflower seeds.
I'm very partial to sunflower seeds.
My second overall pick in the
You actually have the double pick here in the snake draft. You have the double. So you've got two quality selections coming up here.
With the sixth overall pick, I'm going to snap into a Slim Jim. Slim Jims are great, again, especially on a road trip. And very filling. Some of these things that we're talking about, like sunflower seeds, for example, you could eat 2 billion sunflower seeds and still be hungry. You eat a Slim Jim and a half, you don't have to eat dinner. I'm taking Slim Jim off the board.
I can't argue that.
With my second pick. And I'm up again, so I've got my drink and orange Gatorade. I've got my main course in my Slim Jim. Now I need some dessert. I need something sour. How about a Sour Patch Kid? That sounds good. Sour Patch Kids come off the board.
You took a selection that I was anticipating taking
in the later rounds,
but that, you know, that's what it is. I left it there. I left it available, and now you selected it.
If you so choose to package something together to trade me for Sour Patch Kids.
No, I feel I'm personally really happy with what I have right now.
This could be a Penny Hardaway, Chris Webber draft day trade situation if there's something that entices me.
I'm super happy with what I have right now.
Me too. I got the best team. It's not even close.
With orange Gatorade, one overall, you're the best team. I have a very sports machine type question here. If I take peanuts, do I get salt in the shell and the non-salt in the shell
No,
peanuts?
You have to take a certain kind of peanut. Now, no one else can take peanuts, but if you take the Planters honey roasted peanuts, you don't get the traditional baseball peanuts. That's a different kind of peanut.
I'm so just clarifying.
That's the qualification here with the rule. Sean, I feel like that's a very fair rule. Is that not a fair rule?
That's very fair. Beyond fair.
With that rule in mind, I'm taking the baseball salt in the shell peanuts. I'm a salty guy, clearly. I've now got seeds, Doritos, and salt in the shell peanuts.
Wasted pick here.
Way too similar.
Very wasted pick here. Wasted pick here.
Way too similar.
Wasted pick here.
But it does give me a chance to tell about the time that I sold peanuts for a summer at Wrigley Field in section 314. Remember what I yelled?
I don't want to even say it.
Don't be shy. Grab your nuts.
With the ninth overall selection, I can't believe this is still on the board. Pizza rolls. What are you guys doing here? How is pizza rolls still on the board?
Because nobody's ever eaten a pizza roll without burning their tongue on the first one. So if you're willing to burn your tongue and then eat the rest of your snacks, go for it.
Pizza rolls coming off the board with the follow-up. I mean, to get this kind of value late, ramen noodles coming off the board.
What is this, jail?
Ramen noodles.
She gets some grandma's cookies.
Coming off the board. I mean, right now,
your team sucks.
I am putting together an absolute clinic. I have food that you can eat. Food. Legitimate food.
Rob's basically got Chex Mix with his first three picks.
I would argue that ramen's a meal, not a snack, just for the record.
It's 17 cents. That's a meal?
I mean, College Rob enjoyed some ramen as a meal. He wasn't snacking on ramen. The price doesn't affect snack.
Okay, do you want me to draft something else if ramen noodles don't count?
We should vote.
I'll take something else if I can't take ramen noodles. But pizza rolls, does that count as a snack?
Pizza rolls in the same category as I'm thinking these are meals. But
those are meals?
Pizza roll. I don't know because I understand both. I've absolutely had pizza rolls and ramen noodles for a meal, but most of the time I eat both those things I don't know the last time I had ramen noodles, but every time I've ate pizza rolls in the last 15 years, it's been a snack. It hasn't been a main meal. It's been an in-between meal. So I'll give you that one.
That's the argument that I'm making is, you're right, maybe when I was 15, 16, but now I only have ramen noodles where I eat dinner. It's like 11:30 at night. I don't want to eat something else, so I just make a package of ramen noodles, and that holds me over until the morning. So I would still consider it a snack.
Yeah,
I would.
The judge is going to side with the plaintiff here. I think it is a snack, actually.
All right, thank
Sorry,
you.
Rob.
Those are snacks. I think those are snacks.
You made some good points.
I just wanted the qualifications. That's fine. It's fine in the snack category. It's back to me.
Yeah.
Chocolate chip cookies. Gotta have some sweet. Chocolate chip cookies. Y'all waited too long on this.
I was going Chips Ahoy at the end. I was going Chips Ahoy to end this thing.
Why the hell would you get Chips Ahoy when you can get your mama's homemade cookies or go down to the city market back when the city market opens back up and get sweet Galena's cookies for $1 a piece? Or you could get Thin Mints. But go ahead and take your Chips Ahoy. I'd rather have EL Fudge. Is it me?
I've never heard anyone this adamantly against Chips Ahoy cookies.
Oreos?
They're amazing.
Double stuffed Oreos?
Chips Ahoy are better cookies than double stuffed Oreos? Yeah, double stuffed is too much stuff. I don't need all that.
No, it's a perfect amount of stuff. That's the thing. I can't imagine if they ever made single stuffed Oreos. Not nearly enough. Double stuffed is perfect. And you're sick if you actually think the Chips Ahoy cookies, flaky and crunchy, and you never know exactly the consistency compared to an Oreo.
They make softer ones. You can get the chewy ones. You don't got to get the hard ones.
Well, they make 50 different flavors of Oreo, too. Back to me.
You got two picks or you're done.
Okay. I need something filling. Give me my Aunt Rochelle's deviled eggs. Aunt Rochelle's deviled eggs. I can eat those things 15
at a time.
That's a
snack?
A deviled egg is a snack if a ramen noodle is a snack? Hell yeah. Rob, is it?
I would consider that to be an appetizer. I would just consider that to be an appetizer. That's me, though.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't consider nacho. Like, I don't make nachos at home.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying is that's me, though. Rob, what's your vote? I would consider deviled eggs to be an appetizer.
I think the precedent's been set with pizza rolls. I'm fine with it counting as a snack. Okay. It's a bad pick regardless.
All right. Deviled eggs.
All right. And I got one pick left.
I hope you got enough toilet paper because you got Gatorade, Slim Jim, and deviled eggs. This is an awful draft.
Give me, shut up over there, Chips Ahoy. Give me Kraft string cheese. Give me Kraft string cheese with my final pick. My team is smoking yours like a Wiz Khalifa joint, and it's not even close.
This team stinks.
All right, Chips Ahoy.
I know I'm confidently coming in at second. Worst case. That team's awful.
Terrible team.
Rob, all you have right now is Chex Mix. You got sunflower seeds. You got all those weird little brown things. What's next? Puppy Chow, Rob? Puppy Chow?
Salty. He's got Trail Mix.
Trail Mix coming next, Rob.
Give me a salty snack over deviled eggs. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my goodness.
What are you taking?
That's funny.
I need a beverage. Really, this is a controversial pick. I'm aware of it. My beverage of choice, Sprite.
I love Sprite.
Sprite's fun.
I always say Sprite if someone asks you to get them something to drink from
the gas station.
Sprite or just a regular Gatorade is normally a good one. Nobody dislikes Sprite. I know a lot of people that don't like Coca-Cola and Pepsi. I'm kind of in that category. It's not my favorite soda. I'll drink it, but nobody dislikes those.
I have never come across somebody that was upset when they got a Sprite. Maybe they'd rather have something else, but they'll drink a Sprite. Everybody will drink a Sprite. Not as good as a Gatorade, but it's fine.
I can't believe that I'm getting this value with the final pick. Not a single person took a Little Debbie snack. Not a single person.
What are you taking, a Swiss cake?
Not a Star Crunch. Not a Twinkie. Not a nothing.
Oatmeal cream pies are nasty.
Fudge rounds off the board. Fudge rounds off the board.
You got enough chocolate over there?
And that concludes the final pick in the Drive Snack Draft.
I'm hungry. That sounds like a delicious meal. Think about this. A Slim Jim with a side of deviled eggs, string cheese, an orange Gatorade to wash it down, and some Sour Patch Kids for dessert? That's a meal of champions right there. Or diabetes, one or the other.
What I don't really get about your draft, which maybe is a little bit confusing, is if you were going to go beef jerky, wouldn't you have just got like actual bags of beef jerky? Like you're going to eat the individual. So you didn't even get the little beef jerky that comes in the same package with the cheese. You know the one I'm talking about.
I do. And the cheese is nasty. That's weird because I don't mind the beef stick with the stick of cheese next to it. The stick of beef is good. The stick of cheese is nasty, which is why I got the Slim Jim and separately got the string cheese and told you specifically that I want Kraft string cheese. None of this knockoff, always save brand. I want the real thing. I want Robert Kraft string cheese, and I want Slim Jim the same way that Randy Macho Man Savage once snapped into a Slim Jim.
If we had a wild card pick, I was very happily going to go Lunchable as a team. You know, the one that came with the Capri Sun. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Delicious.
And you get a lot of stuff. You pretty much get everything that we put in all these combined with Lunchable.
Yeah, I know. You get crackers, cheese, meat, cookies, and
deviled eggs.
And a Capri Sun. Well-balanced meal there. Rob, what's your team?
My team. We got Doritos, sunflower seeds, salt-in-the-shell peanuts, chocolate chip cookies, and a nice Sprite. By the way, you guys taking drinks in the first and second round. Fools. Wait till round five. It's like picking a kicker in the first round.
I mean, I just needed Simply Lemonade. Like, I wasn't gonna let the possibility of one of you take, because I know me, if I'm gonna be in the house for a long period of time, I need Simply Lemonade. I need it.
What were the first three?
Gatorade 1-1 is what I'm really calling out here.
Rob, what were the first three that you drafted?
First three, Doritos.
Uh-huh.
Sunflower seeds.
Bite-size and crunchy, and?
Salt in the shell peanuts.
Bite-size and crunchy. All right, man, you got Chex Mix. Good for you. You should have got Orange Gatorade.
Rob's still hungry.
Starving.
At the end of this. Rob is still hungry.
And it doesn't even taste
good. To
get
me to a meal. This isn't to get through the day.
At least deviled eggs taste good.
I don't know how deviled eggs got through the thing here. I don't.
You're just mad because I took Sour Patch Kids.
No,
I know
I'm not
you.
Mad at all.
Yeah, you are.
You said someone had to prepare them. Not you were going to make them. You were like, let me get my Aunt Darlene's. So you mean, you telling me in the snack draft, I could have got my grandma's gumbo? I just could have had my grandma come over during the quarantine
well,
and cook
no.
for us?
No, everybody thinks gumbo's a meal.
I could have had fried chicken.
No, fried chicken's a meal. But if she makes a snack.
So I could have had my grandma's cheesecake in this. I could have had my grandma,
no, that's
87 years old, whip it up.
I don't think you understand.
And then I could have done it. No. I'm just asking. No. I don't understand.
Because you're giving me meals and you're giving me desserts.
You got Aunt Sarah's deviled eggs on here. How is that a snack?
Let's say your grandma makes the famous celery sticks with peanut butter inside of them. Then you could have your grandma's famous celery sticks with peanut butter inside of them. But if your grandma makes gumbo, that's a meal, and that's not what we're talking about. Do you understand?
People's grandma makes the celery? Like, that's like a thing your grandma, hey, baby, you hungry? Let me go ahead and cook it up for you. And then she goes in there and she makes celery with the peanut butter on it?
Well,
different kind of grandmas. My grandma never did nothing
yes.
like that. My grandma would either, she always had the grape Kool-Aid in the refrigerator. Y'all don't know nothing about grape Kool-Aid. Never even had the grape Kool-Aid. Probably didn't even put sugar in your Kool-Aid. And then she would whip me up something to eat. But I never, celery? No.
Well, I was more of a red high C guy, thank you very much, or an orange Gatorade. That's why I was the first pick in the draft.
Y'all was living good out here. We didn't have that.
And if you ever put cream cheese inside of a celery stick, that'll change everything for you.
We couldn't even get Kool-Aid. We had to get Wendy's. You remember that little the knockoff Kool-Aid? If they had to get Wendy's.
That's bad.
My team is fancy. Can you put this on here, please? Can you put this on Twitter.com so people can vote on this and our snack draft? So my snack, I mean, it's absolutely flawless. Pringles. Simply Lemonade. It doesn't matter what kind. You want to go blueberry. You want to go regular lemonade. You want to go, I mean, they got so many great flavors. Pizza rolls, ramen noodles, chicken flavor, of course, and fudge rounds. Fudge rounds is off the board. We will let Twitter decide, or even the text line, however you want to do it. We'll let the text line or Twitter decide who won the snack draft. I feel very confident that you came in last place. I thought your draft was bad. I thought you were basically the Cleveland Browns of this draft, I thought. I don't think you put together a good draft.
I have a very well-balanced meal. All you've got is a bunch of chocolate stuff over there, and all he's got is a bunch of little bite-sized, salty snacks. It basically combines into Chex Mix. I cover all the boxes. I got deviled eggs, relatively healthy. I got string cheese, a good side dish with anything. Snap into a Slim Jim, Sour Patch Kids, and an orange Gatorade. Everybody knows I've got the best team. Come on.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, we'll talk a little bit of baseball with Dennis Leonard. He'll join the show coming up in just in the 4 o'clock hour. I want to play this for you very quickly. This is Ian Rappaport talking about the Indianapolis Colts and why they picked Rivers over Brady.
Frank Reich talked about the things he loved about Brady. He thought the tape really was phenomenal. And obviously Brady, you know, one of the all-time greats, that goes without saying. They believe that Philip Rivers was a better fit for them, in part because of the familiarity that he had with offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni, with Frank Reich himself, with Jason Michael, the tight ends coach. That was one factor. Another factor is Tom Brady signed a 2-year fully guaranteed deal with the Bucs. Doesn't seem like the Colts were willing to go there. By the way, Andrew, they also did more than that as far as scouting-wise. They looked into a potential trade for Nick Foles. Didn't want to give up a draft pick there. Thought Rivers was a better option. They did the same for Andy Dalton, who would have probably needed maybe to alter his salary to come to Indy. In the end, they believe that Rivers has more than enough left to give them 1 year and potentially more after that.
I'll give the Colts organization a lot of credit. They were put in a very difficult spot. I don't know if many organizations could really withstand their franchise quarterback just retiring 2 weeks before the season began. I mean, they were in preseason when Andrew Luck left. They had Jacoby Brissett, who I think is a quality backup, and he just has a pretty defined ceiling. Like, you're not going to win 10 games with Jacoby Brissett, your quarterback. They were a manageable team last season, but certainly not good enough in a division that's wide open. If Rivers has anything left in the tank, I think the Colts can win that division. I think now with the better defense, I think a capable running game, and with weapons like T.Y. Hilton and just a better coaching staff and organization, I think the Colts will make the playoffs next year. They pretty clearly focused in on Philip Rivers and wanted him to be their quarterback and certainly liked him a lot more than Brady. What Rappaport is saying is make a lot of sense. If you're telling me I can have Rivers on a 1 year, $25 million deal, or have Brady on a 2 year, $50 million deal, I'll take Rivers every day of the week.
And I think that's pretty much why they pigeonholed themselves in on Philip Rivers, because they know that neither one of them is a long-term solution to their problem. Last year, they tried to fix it with Jacoby Brissett and pay him $18, $20 million a year, and it didn't work out great. I just think Philip Rivers is washed up. Every time I bring up Tom Brady, you and certainly Rob like to go, last year he had 24 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Well, that's true.
I mean, I do more than that with him. I mean, I'm a big believer in the NFL that if you're a good quarterback, you'll complete at least 65% of your passes. Like, if you go on there and look at the quarterbacks who complete less than that, you won't think any of those quarterbacks are good. He completed 60% of his passes last year. Like, that's a significant problem, and yards per attempt. I don't know if there is a better indicator on how good of a quarterback you are than yards per attempt. He was bottom five in the league last year. Like, to me, those stats, I just don't know if you can reverse those.
I don't think you can reverse interceptions. And Tom Brady threw 8 of them compared to 24 touchdowns. That's one more touchdown pass than Philip Rivers threw. Philip Rivers threw 23 touchdowns and 20 interceptions. Philip Rivers last year had 23 touchdowns and 20 interceptions. That's the second worst touchdown to interception ratio next to Jameis Winston. And the third is not even close, Mitchell Trubisky. So 23 touchdowns and 20 interceptions, and that gets you $25 million a year? And you start talking about that's going to be the solution to our problem and get to the playoffs? I don't think so. I think Philip Rivers sucks, and I think they're going 7-9.
What's the difference, I guess, in this with how you feel about Roethlisberger compared to Rivers? I mean, Roethlisberger's always been a high interception guy. He's never been a consistently single-digit interception guy. I mean, the last 4 years for Ben Roethlisberger, 16, he led the NFL, 14, 13, and 16. Now, obviously not the 20 that Rivers had last year.
Yeah, he had 16 interceptions and 34 touchdowns.
But he also, he had
18 touchdowns more than interceptions. Philip Rivers had 3 more.
Yeah, but I also say situation-wise, he was in a much better situation. James Conner, I think, was a better running back in his prime than either of the two running backs, and Le'Veon Bell's a top 5 running back, and you had Antonio Brown during that time, certainly a lot better than Keenan Allen, just a better organization with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm with you. I think Roethlisberger's better than Philip Rivers too, but I guess I'm saying is if you can manage the high interception numbers of Ben Roethlisberger and still put together a good offense, all you got to do with Rivers is no one thinks that Rivers is going from 20 to 5. That's not realistic. But can you go from 20 to 13? Can you go from 20 to 14 next year? That seems feasible to me.
Not me. I think he sucks. I wouldn't be surprised if the number goes up. And maybe it's because I watch him really closely every time the Chiefs face him, and it feels like Philip Rivers hasn't beat the Chiefs since the Nixon administration. And every time I see him playing Kansas City, he's throwing 3, 4, 5 interceptions. But come on, man. The last time we saw Ben Roethlisberger, he threw 34 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, and more yards than Patrick Mahomes. He threw for 5,000. And you're right, he had more weapons, but there's no comparison. Ben Roethlisberger, late in his career, has held on and been a much better quarterback and consistent than Philip Rivers. I'm going to stick to my guns. I don't think Philip Rivers is any good. I think he's completely washed up, and I think Indy made a mistake. I think if Indy was willing to give $25 million for one season of Philip Rivers, they probably should have looked at a guy like, Teddy Bridgewater, for example, that got 20. If you can get him at a cheaper rate and he's much younger and I think a better quarterback, I have no idea why Indianapolis thought that Philip Rivers was the answer to their problems.
So earlier today, Greg Jennings on First Things First thinks that the Patriots should make a play for Cam Newton.
I do think that they're making a mistake by not going after Cam, because what is there to lose if you do go after Cam? Yes, everything that Nick said, totally understand that, and he is absolutely correct. but you can find a way to make it work. Teams have always found a way to make money work if they want to acquire talent that they don't have. And when you look at Cam Newton, he provides that spark right away. Now, Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer, they're seeing a lot more of them than we have ever saw of them. And so they know where their progression is, specifically Stidham, who they're saying is they're going to be their number one guy.
So that was Greg Jennings earlier today on First Things First. I don't think Cam's going to sign between now and the NFL draft. If I'm a team, I'm going to wait and play it out and see how the board plays itself when it comes to quarterback, and then we'll double back on Cam and we'll double back on Jameis Winston after all of this stuff has kind of sorted itself out. I mean, we're less than a month away from the NFL draft, and you got a chance to go get the quarterback you want in the draft. I wouldn't sign either of those guys now. I'd wait. I'd play it out. I'll see how the next 3 weeks play itself, and then I'll see how the board falls in the draft, and then I'd make a decision on whether I want Cam or Jameis.
The difference between Jameis and Cam, though, is Jameis is relatively healthy, except the LASIK surgery. He just stinks. He just tosses a lot of interceptions. He's basically, Phillip Rivers, younger. And then you got Cam Newton, who, as long as he's healthy, which obviously is a huge if, then he's probably a top 10, top 12 quarterback still. I'm surprised that somebody hasn't taken a flyer on Cam Newton. I'm not that surprised that Jameis Winston's still out there.
Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Dennis Leonard, Royals Hall of Famer, to celebrate what would have been opening day. But coming up, we've got to figure this out. It's time for People's Court. That's coming up. It's The Drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.